Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And back again, we have Richard Lawrence. Richard is a spiritual teacher and international best-selling author whose books have been sold in many countries. These include the international bestseller Unlock Your Psychic Powers, Journey into Supermind, Realize Your Inner Potential. And God's Guides and Guardian Angels. Richard has participated in hundreds of TV and radio shows, talks and seminars worldwide, including GB News, Talk TV, Times Radio and Coast to Coast AM. In addition to having a column in The Observer, he has written for the Daily Express, Daily Mail, The Sun, Women's World, Here's Health, Health and Fitness, amongst many other journals. Richard teaches events and workshops such as Awaken Your Chakras at the Aetherius Society in London. And in this week's show, part one, we discuss Dr. George King, who is the founder of the Aetherius Society. Dr. George King was a spiritual teacher, author, and yogi, who devoted himself to intensive meditation practice, which led to achieving a state of samadhi, a deep trance and communication with cosmic masters.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So, Richard, wow. I just would like to welcome you back again to the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you very much. It's really great to be back.
Yeah. And what a show we have. Part one of The King Who Came to Earth. We're going to discuss this week, it's back to front, I think, this wonderful biography that you wrote about your spiritual teacher, Dr. George King. And yep. It's such an in-depth biography. And I just would like you just to begin to tell us a little bit about who Dr. King was and, you know, the Aetherius Society and what inspired you to write such a detailed account of his life.
Well, I knew him very well. So I was, as well as being his, really a disciple of his and a colleague of his, because I helped him to run the Aetherius Society for decades. But for the last 20 years of his life, we were great friends, and we spoke pretty well every day, either in person or on the phone. And so I had a great love for him. I still do. It's a complex book, I will admit, because has there's so much to him, and it's so deep. But as a person, you'd love him. He was wonderful to be with. He could be very strict. He was extremely honest, so you knew exactly where you stood with him all the time. There was no playing games or any of that stuff. But at the same time, he had this wonderful compassion. So it was a real honor for me, and my co-author was Brian Kniep, who had been with him sort of as one of his main aides for the last 10 years of his life, mainly in a place called Santa Barbara in California, where he had a residence. And so the two of us got together with the backing of the society worldwide, and wrote the biography.
Brilliant. It's so amazing. And one thing that is amazing to me through the book is that Dr. King always wanted to be, you know, appear quite ordinary. You know, that so many of these, you know, all of his acclaimed, you know, abilities and his, you know, communication in his mediumship and, or, you know, reaching all these high states of levels of consciousness and everything. Why do you think he was like that? Why did he want to keep all of them abilities, you know, quiet and, you know, not open about it? You know, it's just amazing to me. Yeah.
You're spot on, actually. I see him in a way as a spiritual maverick, if that's not I mean that in a complimentary way. He didn't want or set out to be what was perceived in those days as what a yogi. He was a master of yoga and a very great one, but he didn't want to follow that line. He had a tremendous sense of humor. He was a very practical person. He could be a very down-to-earth person. And I would say, not talking politically here, but he was quite conservative in his dress and his behavior and his manners. He was very correct, but at the same time, extremely open-minded. So you had this strange combination of a down-to-earth, raised in Yorkshire person who was very direct, and called, as it were, a spade and so forth, but also was doing these far out, extremely elevate, very radical things. I mean, he had no time for the establishment, in inverted commas, nor was he a revolutionary politically either, but he just knew that they didn't know the truth. So he didn't look to, as it were, the authorities upon earth, be they religious, be they political, be they whatever, for the answers. He set out to find them. I mean, just to name one thing, to take up yoga as he did just after the Second World War, so that was 1945, as a man in those days in London, a very conservative place, and start practicing yoga for 8 hours a day, which he did for 10 years. That just named that, that alone shows how different he was prepared to be. And of course, he got the results because he was extremely disciplined. Mm. He was celibate. He worked. He had a job to do. He didn't have money coming from anywhere. He had to earn his money through a variety of jobs, mainly driving jobs, but different things. But what he was intent on doing was getting to truth. And he did get to truth. And then his mission began really 10 years later, really 1954, which was to be the channel for intelligences from other worlds.
Wow. It's just so fascinating. The foreword states, you know, that readers will either agree with Dr. King that he was one of the most significant men in the history of this planet, or dismiss it as unbelievable, because some of the most... It truly is. I mean, some of the questions I'm going to ask you is like so out there and unbelievable. Yeah. But because we are open-minded and we know that these things carry on in the multidimensional other realms, you know, what evidence convinced you that he was truly a cosmic avatar? And please, first of all, can you tell us, our audience, what is an avatar?
Okay, so an avatar is a Hindu term for a divine incarnation. It's not restricted to the Hindus. I mean, the Christians see Jesus as a divine incarnation. And there are others throughout, even indigenous tribes and different cultures, of beings who are born of God. And, you know, they would make the statement, for example, the Orthodox Christian would make the statement that Jesus is the one and only Son of God. When I first heard about the society, I mean, I must admit, I had a very, very open mind and I was searching for truth. I was at university. It made, although, as you rightly say, some of it sounds unbelievable to a lot of people. And some people will dismiss something just because it sounds unbelievable, which is foolish because they don't know that it's not true. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, I'm not sure. That's okay. Yeah. But to dismiss it just because it sounds crazy to you or sounds unbelievable is not an intelligent thing to do. Mm. But to me, it made perfect sense, because what was being said here was that these avatars, Sri Krishna, Lord Buddha, Lao Tse, I could list off one or two more, Hercules is another one, Samson, etc. Obviously, Sankaracharya and some of the Patanjali. Mm. These intelligences who have been called avatars by various people were in fact from other worlds. So this, to me, although it sounds, and especially then it sounded absolutely far out, it's actually, when you think about it, much less of a claim. It's much less radical a claim than to say this one is the only one born in the Middle East, lived to the age of 33, and this was the one and only Son of God. Now, that's an outrageous, but it's certainly a very extreme claim. And if somebody didn't know the history, we didn't have it ingrained in our culture, some of these traditional religions, and they just heard the two alternatives nowadays, I think the one presented by Dr. King is much more credible.
Yes, definitely. You know, there are many that come down and help. There is not just one. You can't say that.
No.
And therefore, the only way is through him. There's many ways, as and they're all sacred, as long as they bring you to the one truth, the one
Yeah.
sacred truth, the one creator.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Jeez.
It's so true. So, and in so chapter one, we're going into chapter one, growing into a master. Dr. King's grandmother reportedly said at his birth, "My God, Mary, this child is not of this earth." Yeah. And then at age six, he had a devastating illness that nearly killed him, which
Yeah.
he later said was deliberately orchestrated by the great ones. Can you explain about this childhood illness? And that many things come to us, don't they? Like illnesses or near-death experiences or very bad traumatic experiences to give us that other to wake us up just to and bring in that intelligence.
Yeah.
So can
I've met on the workshops I run, I've
you
met quite a few people who've told me
tell us
that the crisis in their life could be health, could be an emotional crisis, could be a mental crisis, or whatever it is, sometimes a financial crisis
that?
is the thing that turned them to spirituality. So we have to keep an open mind on that. But in Dr. King's case, and coming, I'm glad you started with what is an avatar, because he was, I believe, an avatar. He didn't go around claiming that, by the way. He didn't. He was a, you know, here's another strange thing about him. He was quite a shy person. He had this odd, unusual combination of being completely confident because he knew who he was, he knew what he was. So if you were lucky enough to be around him, it was extremely faith-inducing, you might say, because you're with someone who knows, and it impinges on your consciousness. And he, but at the same time, and I traveled with him a lot, and you know, went to various places where we had to stay and so on. He was fairly reticent. He wasn't, you know, I'm here and that sort of thing. He wasn't a, what you might call an extrovert, but he could be in the right company and with his own sort of circle and so on. A hilarious entertainer, by the way, as well. So he had all these contradictions in him, but he was born, as you rightly say, you know, in 1919, actually. And his grandmother that you referred to there was herself a medium. So she actually lived mainly in Redcar in the north of England. And although she traveled, but the whole family traveled because his father was a teacher. And in those days, school teachers, they went to a little schoolhouse. We're talking, you know, 1920s and so on. And they would run a school. So he'd have to travel from Devon to Yorkshire to wherever. He didn't like traveling. It actually put him off traveling a bit, this childhood that he had. But his grandmother, important point, was a medium. And he loved spending time with her. I would say she was his favorite relative, probably, to spend time with, because she was in touch with people on the other realms. She was able to see into the future. She made predictions that came true in his life. In fact, I heard that she did do some psychic work for the then Prime Minister, Lloyd George, at one point. But anyway, when he was born, yes, she said, Mary to her daughter, it was Mary, this child is not of this earth. And actually, she was correct, but he didn't go around speaking. So he had, then we have to put ourselves in his shoes. He had to adjust to an alien world. And the closest, but he was very good at adapting. And as I mentioned earlier, in his sort of behavior and so on, he was conservative. And I think that was because that was his way of adjusting to the situation that he found himself in. But if you were very close to him, you could see at times it was clear that he just wasn't, he didn't think the way that we think. And plus, even compared to other avatars, he was very radical. For example, he didn't, as I mentioned, want to see himself as, you know, your traditional yogi at all. He, you know, he would wear a jacket. He smoked. Yeah, he would have a drink. Not a, you know,
That's just so,
yeah,
but that makes him more human. When we're all
very
human and
human.
divine,
And
I
each
think,
went.
you know, he's just a mere man, which Jesus was just a mere man. He just he you know he wasn't the only son of God. He was a mortal man who gained enlightenment. You
Well,
know.
that's true, and that's one of the problems, I think, if I can say this, with the Gospels. And I
Yes.
thought about that when writing the biography, because
Yeah.
the Gospels, and they weren't written by people who knew him well. Even the Gospel of St. John wasn't written by St. John. It was written by people who followed St. John, some
Many
say
years
100
later.
years later.
Yeah.
And Luke didn't know him well, and Mark not that well, from what we can gather. And even his disciples, like St. Matthew, were they around him for what, 2, 1, 2, 3 years? Whereas I was around Dr. King, for example, as one of his biographers, and very closely in very close contact with him, going through various problems and situations with him that we had to deal with over the years, in running an organization and so forth. For decades. And Brian, as I mentioned, the other author, was very close to him for the last 10 years. But even before that, he'd been in his circle. So this is written by people who saw him at very, very close quarters. So in the Gospels, you get an idea of what he did, where he went at certain times, some of the things he said, and some of them were brilliant, like, let he who's without sin cast the first stone. Some of these quotes that come out are very, very good. But what we don't get is an idea. What was Jesus actually like?
Yes,
What
as the
was he
man.
like as a man? What
Yes.
would, what did he do at dinner? Did he drink? Did he
Yeah.
make jokes? Was he serious? Was he praying all the time? Or, we don't get that insight. And it's true, I think, of many, if not all, because even if you take, for example, the Vedas, they've been through thousands and thousands, many more thousands of years than the experts believe. Those texts. And again, you get some idea of Sri Krishna and his playfulness and so on. And you can see what a brilliant man, what a, I will say this, a cunning, spiritually cunning man, actually, Sri Krishna was, which they don't stress. But you don't, again, get a lot of insight into his persona when he was, relaxing, when he was.
I think that's really sad because, that makes Jesus and all of these people like so high that ordinary man we cannot obtain to be like them, because they are godly and we are just mere humans. It is a vast, vast gap between us and them. When they were men, mortals here in flesh and blood bodies that became enlightened, became a master, became, an avatar, which we can all aspire to be as ordinary human divine beings. We can do that. And I think that they've just put him on such a pedestal that ordinary man cannot be like that. And I think that's sad.
And Dr. King wasn't like that at all. I mean, when I started working for him, I was 25, and I'd been a school teacher for a couple of years, but this was my vocation. So I was brought out on a very, very, I will say, minimal salary because there wasn't a lot of money around. There isn't money in this work, as I'm sure you know. People might think there is, but there isn't. But anyway, that doesn't matter. But we were walking. I felt very inadequate. And I'd made mistakes. And as I mentioned to you, he was very strict and very honest. And he knew this. And I was walking with him and another person by the banks of the Thames in Putney, on Putney towpath, one evening. And he knew I felt that way. And he turned to me and he said, "There is nothing that I've done that you couldn't do." And as he did it, he pointed at me and said, "There's nothing I've done that you couldn't do." And as he said that, I thought, that's really nice, but come on, that's what I was thinking as he said it. And then as he pointed, and I thought that, he said, "And I really believe that." And then we carried on walking. So that gives you an insight into his belief in people, incredible belief in people's potential.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And at that, you know, it was, you know, at that time, it's not like now where spirituality and all these, you know, otherworldly, you know, spiritual, you know, all these disciplines, it's so talked about now. Back then, these, you know, even yoga was mysterious to people, just doing the postures, let alone the meditation and the higher realms and all of this.
Yeah.
So it was a time, you know, he was before his time. Well, out of time, really.
He was before his time in numerous ways. I mean, I as I mentioned, he was somewhat something of a spiritual maverick. Mm. So, for example, in the yoga field, there's a couple of things he did that were very different from what you would expect of a master of yoga. Mm. One was to place karma yoga at the top of the tree.
Wow.
And this is his whole raison d'etre. Now, traditionally, and he did practice the traditional yogas, by the way, that I mentioned, he did 8 hours a day. And we're talking here things like Nani yoga, the yoga of wisdom, Raja yoga, the meditation, mantra, mudra. And he gained many powers, including, for example, the power of invisibility. He actually disappeared twice.
Yes.
In front of people, which was witnessed. And he levitated and so on. So he did gain these powers. But at the same time, he determined in the after this 10-year period and when the Aetherius Society was being founded and with the teachings he was receiving, that karma yoga, which had been relegated traditionally as a sort of a lower yoga for the householder, really, person who isn't truly serious, the serious person's the sannyasin. I mean, you'll know this better than me probably, but that's the person who dedicates themselves, you know, cuts off from all materialism. Karma yoga is for your farmer, your, you know, your merchant or whatever, if they want to do it. But he said, no, karma yoga, and it's not karma yoga just doing your worldly duty and detaching from the results, which is an old teaching. It's service to all, service to the whole, not just your family, your friends, but all life on earth.
Yes.
And this has to come first. So that's one thing he really did.
Wow.
And this made him different from a lot of the other yogis that were coming around. And over the next couple of decades, you know, the Maharishi and some of those that, not that I'm comparing him for a minute, but some of the others that emerged, or even before him, the great Vivekananda and others, Sivananda, of course, he really made that change. The other thing he did, which is more technical, and we might come on to, is he entered samadhi, but that's been done before. It's not commonly done, by the way. It's rarely done, but he did do it, and he did it fully. But he used samadhi for another purpose. He, instead of using it as it was perceived and is perceived, and I've dipped my toe in this ocean, but only in the last 2 or 3 years, it's a great state of bliss and oneness and enlightenment. And that's why people perceive. And then that's where you know the truth. You don't even just see the truth. You know the truth because truth isn't a thing. It's a state of being.
Yes.
And you know that. But he didn't use it in that way. He entered it and then used it as a method of channeling. as a method of trance mediumship. And to the best of my knowledge, that has never been done before or since. I actually don't know of anybody else who even claims, and I'm talking about where a communicating intelligence speaks through you. And I know you've covered the nine freedoms and the 12 blessings with Noemi, with Chrissy and so on, which is marvelous. And thank you for that.
Yes.
These were channeled communications he was able to do because he used samadhi in that completely different way. Again, the spiritual maverick, taking something that's wonderful and using it in service for an entirely different reason, not for your own bliss, your own enlightenment, but to leave a set of teachings which are still being practiced and used and will be for many years to come.
That is so honorable. And, you know, I think, as we said before, that, you know, his ascension, he could have ascended any time, but he chose to stay. And
I'm glad you. Thanks you know, for saying that.
It's amazing to choose that. I think is so to give up your ascension, you know, and then you become part of the White Brotherhood here, and using your samadhi time, which could have been your ascension time, to bring in all of the teachings to give out to humanity. That is using your life for the good of all, is it not?
It really is. And it's a very, very good point. It's a very deep point. It's something I've thought about a lot. It's of tremendous interest to me, to be honest, this whole topic, because I believe that he prevented himself from entering the state that would have brought on ascension. Because if you take cosmic consciousness, which is the highest form of samadhi, you could say, some call it nirvana. He's got different names. So some call it seedless samadhi. If you take that to its ultimate zenith, as it were, and you completely raise all the lower energies in their entirety to the highest chakra, which is the Brahma chakra or the crown center, which he could have done, you will bring upon yourself ascension if you're able to do that. But, you know, most people can't do that. Even if they can enter samadhi, and I include myself, they can't raise every vestige of every part of their energy system in the process. That's ascension. The ascended masters are perfect. I mean, they have mastered. They have things to learn, that would be said, because that's evolution. Mm-hmm. They are evolving, but they are perfect as far as we're concerned, because they've perfected every aspect of their life. Now, Dr. King, an avatar, came here not to ascend. He came here to perform a mission. He was already above ascension before he came here.
Wow.
But he had to inhabit an ordinary body where he didn't have all his own powers that he should have had. Mm. So he had a mission to perform. It wasn't necessary for him at all as an individual to enter that highest state of nirvanic bliss, which would lead to ascension. It wasn't part of his necessary mission. What he needed to do was gain the powers that he needed, and he did, such as astral projection at will, which he could do, and so forth. I could list them off. And then he could perform his mission, which wasn't limited to this realm, hence he needed to leave his body. But he had to hold back. As a matter of fact, in the book, The Nine Freedoms, which I know you've covered in depth, he describes cosmic consciousness, which he entered more than once, several times. But he says in that, the description he gives, he cuts it short.
Yes.
He doesn't take it to its zenith, even. And I think this is where he was very different, in a very different situation from the sort of person you're talking about, you and me and the people of this world, who are striving to enter that state. He was actually, he wanted the powers. He needed certain knowledge in that earth physical body, but he didn't wish to ascend. It wasn't his mission to ascend.
Yes.
Jesus was different, and this to me is astounding. I mean, Jesus did ascend. He proved ascension after the crucifixion and that so-called resurrection is a state of ascension. But to do that, for the Master Jesus to do that, I know I'm on a detour here, while being in that physical state of being crucified, because you have to be in a blissful state to ascend. That's just one of the miracles of all time.
It is.
Not only the fact that he rose, but the fact that he could rise from that condition.
Yes.
Into that state.
Amazing. And, you know, when we talk about the ascension process, we talk about not being on the samsara wheel, the birth, death, rebirth, being born back into this realm. Mm-hmm. The ascension process is we go on to higher heavenly realms and the different planets for the soul's journey, you know,
yeah.
The soul's journey.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Yes, to relinquish that everlasting, you know, evolutional journey. Wow, what a sacrifice.
Oh, yeah, it's true. And he was one of the only person I've ever met who could honestly say that he was only here for one reason, and that was to serve every second of every day. He had nothing to gain from this at all. He didn't need this set of experiences in order to advance. He'd advanced beyond, as I mentioned, ascension already before he ever came here.
Mm.
He took upon himself a lower form, as did all the avatars, by the way, Buddha and Krishna and all of them did, and inhabited the body purely 100%, 24 hours a day to serve.
Wow. And you've told me before that when you are in that state and you are of service to humanity, our kundalini naturally rises anyway. You become naturally enlightened. It's because,
yes.
You know, as we said before, all them yogis before and the rishis used to sit in the caves for 50, 60 years having enlightenment, but then they never used to come out and help others to have enlightenment.
True.
The whole world is in such a crisis. Now is the time for us to all go within, for the Christ consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, the Krishna consciousness to become and use that for worldly heightened, you know, elevation and consciousness.
It's very true. I mean, and in the Nine Freedoms, actually, it's stated there that the real mark of an adept is to take cosmic consciousness to its zenith and then not to stay in it, but to detach from it. Dr. King, though, excuse me, he didn't even take it to its zenith.
No.
He cut it short because that wasn't his goal. That wasn't required. He didn't need the knowledge even.
Yes.
As an evolving soul
that
would offer. He just needed the powers. And then when he gained these powers, such as the samadhic power, he used them in service.
Yes. To connect with, you know, the multidimensional realms where all the avatars and the higher beings are to receive that divine intelligence. And
that's right.
Give that out to humanity. That's absolutely amazing. Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of claims out there by a lot of mediums.
Mm.
I'm a medium,
mm-hmm.
but the sort of people that I have channeled are from this earth, from other realms. And some of them are well known. Like, for example, Francis Bacon, the writer Francis Bacon, the scientist, and others. But in order to channel any intelligence, actually, you have to do two things. One, you have to raise your consciousness to the level of that intelligence because you've got to gain rapport with them. And you can't gain rapport if there's a massive gulf between you. So at the moment of the communication, your consciousness has to have been elevated to that level, and this is what samadhi enabled Dr. King to do, because he took his consciousness to the samadhic level. That means that the conscious mind was non-functional, the subconscious mind was non-functional, he was purely bathed in super consciousness.
Yeah.
And then, so that's one thing, that's the consciousness. But the other thing is the methodology, you might call it, the technique. Because it is a science. I've often spoken about mediumship as a journey from seance to science. Because it's not, you know, that there are a lot of mediums out there who do not, and I say this with respect, they don't understand what they are doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't matter because it's fine. But sometimes it could matter. In fact, it could be dangerous.
Yes.
Because what you have to do, and especially if it, I don't do trance mediumship. I tried it decades ago. I found it debilitated my will. I wasn't samadhic. I wasn't capable of that. And I stopped, and I shouldn't have started really. So I just receive a telepathic transmission or emission, you might say, from another intelligence. And I pick it up and I concentrate. You have to concentrate very hard and make sure your mind doesn't interfere with this.
Yes.
But if you can enter samadhi, if you're going to do trance mediumship, really, if you're not in samadhi or very, very close to it, let me just put it that way, because Dr. King did do some channeling before he became a channel for Cosmic Masters, but he was always very close to it. Bear in mind, he didn't carry over the samsaras you're talking about. You know, he came here absolutely clean. He didn't have all the past life clutter that we all have through different lives, different sexes, different experiences.
But he was clean. He was like 0 points.
He was clean from the get-go.
That's why he could, that's why he, after all them years of being in meditation, you know, and so disciplined, that's why he could reach that state.
Yeah, so he, exactly. I mean, he took upon himself karma here, took it upon himself, but he didn't bring over all that stuff that we have to transmute. So it was very, very pure. But what he could do is that the intelligences, this is the cosmic. So when, for example, the nine freedoms was delivered or when the 12 blessings were delivered, the communicating intelligence, so in the case of the nine freedoms is known as Mars Sector 6, for those who haven't heard your broadcast on this, and in the case of the 12 blessings, it was the Master Jesus, another very controversial claim to be making in the 1950s. But still, when they transmit, they transmitted a beam of energy. Yes. And they were able to place that beam, excuse me again.
Yes. It's like photons of divine intelligence straight.
Exactly. Very good way of putting it. So they could transmit it as a beam, you might say, of light, but it was a thought beam.
Yes.
And they could place it on one of his chakras because he was a master of Kundalini yoga. He practiced Kundalini yoga, even dangerous forms, of which he wouldn't recommend anyone to do, by the way. And nor would I, but he did do this, and he was able, therefore. And by the way, you don't need to practice the dangerous forms of Kundalini yoga at all. It's not necessary. You can gain enlightenment without doing that. But a beam was placed on a particular chakra. He never revealed which chakra it is, but let's just say, for example, it was the throat center. And so that beam was then translated into sound.
Yes.
And so you don't just get words or writings. If you take, say, Moses, he says, well, the Lord God said this, that, and the, you know, it's written on a slab of stone, whatever, which is wonderful. But you don't get that. You get the actual voice, the energy, the power, the intonation, the feeling of the communicator as well. But to do that, and many people claim to do it, without entering samadhi, and by the way, without having an intelligence communicating with you who is capable of transmitting a beam of thought upon one of your chakras, too. Think about that. I mean, most communicators on this world couldn't do that, I believe. They just wouldn't know, wouldn't be able to do it. So he had that, and so he had this whole technique going on, which, as I mentioned earlier, I think is completely unique in history. It is not like other people who say, well, I'm in touch with wherever it is, Pleiades, Sirius, whatever.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So just when you just said that, because Samadhi is such a high, beneficial, beautiful, heightened place of state of being, you're not going to get negative other energies coming into that place. So it's almost like a protection for you of divine energy. You know, there is such a protection state of being that it's going to be true divine energies that come to you that give you the truth, not demonic or negative energies coming from other places, because they can't reach that state of samadhi.
Yeah, other places and your own self.
Yeah, and your own self. Your
your own lower self.
Yes.
Your own imagination.
That's
your own
right.
subconscious. And so a lot of these messages that are being given out are either completely, they could be fake, but that's, you know, let's say they're not fake. They could be delusional because they aren't able to rate. It's just a technical scientific fact. They can't enter the state that would be required. And here's another point. It's a karmic manipulation too. And this is Dr. King's life. His whole life was around karma and karmic manipulation for the betterment of others.
Yes.
And he knew that by entering that state and all the effort he'd made, all the sacrifices he'd made as a young man, doing 8 hours of yoga a day on top of a job in his 20s, in his early 30s, was a karmic manipulation that allowed him to be used by higher powers.
That's right. Wow. Absolutely. It's astonishing. It's so astonishing. It really is, you know.
It really is. It is a one-off story. And you did so many unusual things.
Yes.
I'll just name one. When I first started, even actually when I was still a school teacher, I was 23, but he put me on his committee of the society in England, which some of the others on it were a bit surprised. They were quite a bit older and they thought, who's this? Anyway, that doesn't matter. He put me on it. And so he launched a book then called You Too Can Heal, which I know you've covered with Noemi.
Yeah.
And that whole topic of healing. Now it sounds really acceptable. You Too Can Heal. Let me tell you, in 1976, when that book came out, never mind before it, when he was saying You Too Can Heal, even years before he wrote the book, I had the job, I was the press officer, of taking that book to other healing organizations. And there was this 23-year-old speaking to a group of, you know, very experienced healers, for example, the Essex Healers, lovely group in those days, maybe still, I don't know. But they believed, they were very much linked to the spiritualist church, most of these healing groups in those days in England. And they believed you either have a gift or you don't. Mm. And some of them had no, they didn't know what was taking place. And as I mentioned earlier, in some ways that doesn't matter. As long as you're in control and good is being done,
yes,
maybe it doesn't matter. But they would literally allow their guides to heal through them. They all had guides healing through them. I remember going to another, but those Essex healers, though, they, one of them said to me, and he was quite a bit older, like 30 or 40, and he'd been doing this for a while, said, I've learned more tonight about healing. And he turned to the others and said, we've learned more tonight about healing than we've ever learned about what we are doing. It was a very honest man. They learned not from me. I was just a messenger. They learned this from Dr. King. Because he brought his yoga into everything. He brought it into prayer. He brought it into healing. The healing was of the chakras. And as you know, I'm very, very, very focused on chakras and their importance. And it's true of everything, and it's certainly true of healing. Now, I went to another organization, a particular federation of healers, which I perhaps shouldn't name. I think they still exist. But I remember the organizer, I went, met him, took the book. And he said to me, actually, this man isn't alive now, but he said, physically, he's alive. Everyone's alive. he said, you know that isn't true. You've either got it or you haven't. You've either got the gift or you haven't. So now that same organization, within 10 years of that, was teaching a course called Anyone Can Heal.
So you planted the seed there.
It doesn't sound like anything. Well, Dr. King planted the seed, really, but it's another example of him being radical, even within the movement.
And that is incredible because, you know, that's why I love the Aetherius Society, because you are helping, you are giving people the tools for their own awakening of their higher self so that their higher self can heal themselves and they can learn to heal others, because we are all aspiring to become healed healers.
Yeah, and one thing I can say, having been in the Aetherius Society since I was 18, it really does work.
Yes.
It works for the world, and we've seen phenomenal results in the world. But it works for the individual too. It can take you all the way to the states of enlightenment through service.
Yes.
But again, that's, I have to bring that back to Dr. King, a subject of our interview, because he laid those foundations. He didn't actually do it that way himself. He didn't gain enlightenment through service. He came here as an avatar.
Yes.
You know, had his, in fact, he had a very, very difficult choice for him to make when he was around the age of 20, which was whether to fight in the war or not, when people were going to war in the Second World War.
Wow.
And he was in a place called Great Torrington in Devon. And a being, which he regarded then as an angel, appeared to him. He was praying then for the world.
Yes.
When this happened. But he knew how to pray from the age of 10. He knew, although he was taught in church, and as a younger boy, he was quite keen on his church, but he knew there was a lot wrong with it. And he knew that the kind of prayer that was being done with the hands clasped and kneeling down and the head down was not the most effective way of praying. Before he ever took to yoga, he knew that the hands had to be raised, energy channeled through them. So would be perfectly natural. But at the same time, you know, he had to formulate and gain the powers in that life, even though he was an avatar. Jesus the same.
Yes.
Buddha the same. Well, Jesus had to go off and
he had to go off all them years to learn.
Yeah, and he went to Tibet and he practiced Tummo. Lord Buddha went off, gained the powers. That had to be done because that's part of the manipulation, as it were, the karmic manipulation of being an avatar in a terrestrial body. It was a kind of a hell, really, because it's so limiting for an intelligence like that. But at the same time, as I mentioned, he had a great sense of humor, and he made it as good as it could be, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but thank goodness for his efforts, you know, because the discipline really, really helped him become to carry out his divine mission that his soul knew before he was incarnated what he needed to do in this life. You know?
Yeah, and he was, as I mentioned, very strict with it. I mean, he was strict with everyone who was close to him, but he was stricter with himself. And his discipline was phenomenal. He was absolutely single-minded, focused on his task. He didn't much like holidays, or if he had one, there had to be some other reason, you know. And his holiday would be a little trip, Bognor Regis or something.
He didn't want to go far. He just wanted to be with God. He just wanted to be in
that
state.
You're right,
and be of service, because he knew time. Like, you know, he used every single moment of his day, you know, as you said, in service, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm just going to, what we're going to do, I think we could leave this part one here.
Right.
And we will come back for part two, because part two is going to go into real deep depth about his connection with the avatars and the multidimensional realms, which is going to be amazing.
And so the Mother Earth, I hope. Yeah.
Pardon?
And the Mother Earth, I hope.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah. Gaia and the goddess herself, Mother Earth, of course. Because he was, you know, he just loved, that's what I love about him as well.
That was his number one
admiration
love.
For
his
her.
Number, I mean, he loved humanity. You know, he didn't particularly like humanity all the time, but he loved humanity, but even more so, he loved the Mother Earth.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It really is. So, Richard, thank you for being on part
thank
one.
You. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, of giving us all of the in-depth information on Dr. King, Dr. George King, and the Aetherius Society and his wonderful biography. And we'll be back with part two.
Thank you.